What you are about to hear on the Little Red Barn podcast is an informal discussion around topics in agriculture that are common in today's landscape. Any talk about individual companies or ideas or issues is purely a reflection of what we are hearing in our own community on any given day, all across this great countryside of ours. What that generally means is what we say doesn't have to be taken as the absolute gospel truth. As with anything, research, figure it out yourselves. And then if we're wrong, come back and tell us. If you would like to be a guest on the Little Red Barn podcast, please reach out and we will work you in. We don't want to shy away from any differing opinions or anything that makes news or is noteworthy in agriculture. But we reiterate, the Little Red Barn is informal for information and discussion purposes only, and maybe a little bit of entertainment. With that in mind, let's get started. Here's the next episode of the Little Red Barn. On this episode of the Little Red Barn podcast, I'm going to be flat out honest with you right off the top. I'm hungry. I've got a hankering for Chinese food, so do not be surprised if we talk orange chicken, fled lice, and egg roll on the podcast, Charlie.
Absolutely, because my soybeans are going to China this year.
Here we go. Nice segue, sir. But to be honest, as we tackle this past week and look forward at the week that is on the way, not much has changed. Now, fair disclosure here. We were supposed to be talking this week with the dean of
Marion University
at Ancilla. They called us Thursday and said, can we back it up a week? And because we're good guys, we said, sure.
That so, and I want my son to have a good grade going there.
Yeah, you know, you got to suck up to the team. Well, he does. He has to suck up to the university as well. So we're pushing that back a week, and so that leaves us not necessarily scrambling. There's plenty to talk about this week because, Charlie, you mentioned China. China was in the news last week. I'm sure we'll get to that. The Farm Bill was in the news last week. Both of those stories, in Ryan Martin's opinion, not big stories, but you seem to think that they're worthwhile. So we'll talk about those, Charlie. But the other thing I think we need to bring up a little bit is this week's WASD report, because I didn't think this was going to be too much of a story. And then StoneX came into the marketplace last week and made a big kersplash with their yield estimates. So we're going to talk that as well.
Yeah, that was a big surprise when they came in and said 184 for a corn average.
184.8. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But otherwise, look, let's talk week. This past week, we had a little bit of rain around, and that is going to be the pattern that we see through most of this week. It's a pattern that doesn't necessarily give everybody rain on any given day. I mean, a great example is going to be last Friday. It turned out to be a very warm, very humid day, which, by the way, did you wear that shirt on Friday?
You bet I did.
And I ask that because, as I always seem to get now these days, I seem to get people that are just trying to get a rise out of me that want to bring up corn sweat and corn fog all the time. And then you roll up today wearing this shirt. And if you were wearing it last Friday when I got the talk on all the corn sweat, this is, I'm not sure this is as loud as, and you're choking up over there.
You bet.
You wouldn't have this happen if you wore different shirts. This is, I think, even louder than the John Deere and International M shirts that you wear. This is a Hawaiian shirt covered with corn cobs. You do know if it's a Hawaiian shirt, there's no corn in Hawaii.
There's sea corn in Hawaii.
Yes, but it's only small patches that they're trying to make bigger. I know. I visited the operation. But anyway, corn sweat. Last Friday was a great example, not of corn sweat, but of
up here. Oh, yeah, it was. The dogs were covered from tail to nose. Yeah,
I walked soaked. I walked the cornfield last Friday. I did get soaked, but it wasn't corn sweat. It was dew. And that's what I keep telling you, Charlie. You send me pictures of wet corn, I'm telling you it's dew. I feel like we're on an episode of Bob Spursky's Superfans, and Charlie's going to start hacking himself in the chest because he's having a heart attack over there as he starts hacking away. Anyway, last Friday...
So that pollen I've been eating, putting on fungicide.
You just took a swig of your Arizona iced tea and it went down the wrong hole. That's what happened. Last Friday, storms popped to the south. It was very warm, very humid up north over the northern third of Indiana. We got nothing. Meanwhile, the day before, Thursday, rained nice and easy. How much did you get out of that Thursday rain? I had about a half. I had a half.
Three-tenths.
But the way it came, it felt like it was just that. It was a good rain. And that's what we're going to be seeing this week, although I think with a little bit more thunderstorm action in here. You may get it today. I don't, but then I get it tomorrow, and you don't today. Just like this cough that you have today. Do you need to go outside and relieve yourself?
Boy, if this continues, I'm just going to whiz in my pants or something here.
Whatever. But I do think that we have plentiful moisture coming all the way through this week, taking a bit of a pause over the weekend, and then next week looks very, very similar with moisture around. So, Charlie, I don't know. You were this past week working with a lot of fungicide. It's a good time of year to be working fungicide. But let's talk about if my forecast verifies here. If we end up with what I'm calling for is 1 to 3 inches of rain combined over the next 2 weeks. Okay, so you may not get some one day, but you get it the next. But over the next 2 weeks, 1 to 3 inches of rain. What does that do for these diseases that we're spraying fungicide for right now? Tar spot, white mold. I heard some white mold in some counties in your neck of the woods last week. So what does that do?
That would increase the disease presence out there for those soybeans. We want to protect those soybeans. We got some high yielding beans out there. At this point, I'm seeing short beans, but I'm seeing the inner nodes are really stacked together at 1-inch increments as you go up the plant and up the branching. That's what I'm seeing out there. And white mold would be devastating getting in there and cutting off those plants.
So when you say it increases, does this weather pattern negate what you just sprayed and already sprayed? Does it increase the burden on this fungicide to the point that you're already starting to think in the back of your mind, second passes and things like that?
I'm not thinking a second pass at this point. I've rarely seen a second pass. Mm-hmm. So once we're protected, we got that curative and protected on there. Mm-hmm. We're good.
Okay. Because I think that's going to be the story as we go forward. This is going to be a weather pattern that is ripe for these fungal diseases, fungal issues to show themselves more and more through the middle of August, because it's not just damp. I go back to last Friday. That was nasty. That was just the humidity, the dew point levels. Dew points were probably not much more than 66 or 67, but it just felt there. Well, it was foggy through at least 11 a.m. on Friday.
Yeah, it was foggy to 10 o'clock or so up where we're at. Mm-hmm. And saw a lot of moisture. All week we've seen moisture.
Yeah.
We were out in the cornfields. We're starting out in the cornfields at 8 o'clock in the morning with the sprayer putting on the fungicide. I was still getting moisture on the windshield until about 10:30, 11.
Yeah.
Consistently, day in, day out.
Yeah. Yep. So that's going to be probably, I think, the story here nearby on the weather. Let's talk about some of the headlines of the day this past week, because I know you're itching to do that now that you actually have caught your breath and you're okay to actually chat. The first thing that you brought up at the top, since I was hankering for some Chinese food here as we move through the day.
We saw some Chinese purchases out there.
China was in and buying. Now, I don't think this is a big deal. And we've mentioned it here on the podcast before. And if you've missed previous episodes, this is why I don't think China buying right now is a big deal. Because they told us they would. their program, 25 million metric tons. Where are they at right now? I think this was the key for the week, though. I heard through some of the channels that I have that aggregate now, China is probably sitting at about 6 point something, 1, 2, 3 in their million metric tons of aggregate purchases so far. So that means they're about 19 million, well, 18.7-ish million to go. And if you add up the number of weeks that we have until December 31st, you know, we're still averaging, needing to average a little bit under a million metric tons per week to get to their target. Right now, they are not buying anything more than they told us they would buy, Charlie. So this should already be in the balance sheet. I do not really understand why the market has been all a flutter over China buying this past week.
I think it's showing that the demand has come back to the market from China.
It was already here.
But it wasn't here last year, and people are happy to see it back.
Even with the 12 or whatever million metric tons they bought, it was, you know, when and what they front-loaded. Remember, before they stopped buying, this past year, Charlie, and didn't buy anything through the gut slot of harvest, then they came in and bought that 12.5 million metric tons. Remember, they were way ahead of pace. They had bought more coming out of the 24-25 crop year. Mm-hmm. They were way ahead. So I maintain it was, it's just math.
Negotiating.
It was math. I don't think the demand is any more this year than it was last year when you get down to the actual teeth of the matter of what they bought aggregate on a calendar year, crop year basis, calendar crop combined versus what they're going to buy this year. I don't think so.
You may have a point there, but it's the market. The market's perspective is what we're really trading here at this point in time. We're trading headlines. And part of the headlines is, hey, China's back.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, Mr. Huyen. I'm glad you brought up the market perspective and markets trading its perspective. Because here is where I'm going to say, all right, great. The market is stupid. Because here's the reason why. If you want to talk market perspective, which is it? The crop is horrible. 61% good to exit on corn. Last week, 63% good to exit on beans. Everybody sees those numbers come out the beginning of the week, and it's like, oh, well, we've taken the top off of this corn, top off of this corn, top off the beans. It's just not the crop that we had last year. But then we hear the weather isn't as bad as what we thought it was going to be. So you've got the market trying to trade good to exit numbers that have fallen or down to no better than about two-thirds good to exit or less. But yet on the other side, we're saying the weather wasn't as bad and didn't cause as many problems. If you're going to say the market perspective is what we're trading on the demand side, then you got to look at the market perspective on the weather side and supply side and say, this market has no idea. It can't tell its butt from a hole in the ground.
Well, that's a lot of what it does at this time of year anyway. It's usually up and down, and we're like, we're looking at the WASDE report coming out this week. It's going to be a big player, I think.
Well, and let's talk about that a little bit. Stone X, you mentioned it off the top, 184.8, almost 185 bushel to the acre. Soybean number, much higher than anticipated as well. Is that truth, or is that going to, Charlie, be the high end of the trade range guesses?
Well, they were on the high end last year. I would imagine you got to make a splash when you come out, when you're the first one to release those numbers.
Well, if they were on the high end last year, did they turn out to be right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And there we go. That therein lies the problem. This WASDE report, I think, is going to be a little bit interesting. Out on Wednesday, midweek. It's very rare that we get one right in the middle of the week. A lot of times it's Tuesday or Thursday. Wednesday report is a little bit different. This one, I think, will have an adjustment to yield on both corn and soybeans. What I'm more interested in is whether or not they make any adjustments in exports. And it's not where you think. You talked about China. You're all excited about China. I could care less about China.
You're excited about Europe.
I'm excited about Europe. Exactly right. Because on the weather side, let's go back and put on my meteorologist hat again for this podcast for a little bit. Europe has been absolutely baking under oppressive heat. They've been dry. Apparently, the French corn crop looks like butt. You have the wheat crop that was over there in France that was just awful. So they are looking at some supply side problems over a large part of the heart of the row crop area, let's just say, in Europe. And so I'm looking to see when do they come to the table, or when do we think they come to the table, and do we see any kind of adjustments in exports highlighting problems in Europe going forward? Remember, Ukraine and Russia still aren't playing nice. Bombing each other's ships and ports and all this kind of stuff. That's why wheat prices took off this past week again. So you're not going to be seeing Europe be able to pull anything in out of the Black Sea area either, as long as Russia and Ukraine continue to not play nice.
Well, yeah, and it's impressive that it's held off this long. And I'm really surprised it's not a bigger factor than what it has been in the past. For all the talk that was out there, it's like a one-day splash in the market, and mm-hmm. you're like, okay, that's nice.
Yep.
It's almost like what we're doing over there in Iran. Yeah, we let them through one day, and that's great, and prices go down for oil and corn, and next day, guess what? We're bombing the crap out of each other again, and we're going to have airstrikes every night on them. And
until we run out of missiles.
Until we run out.
Yeah. Do you believe that story, that we're low on missiles?
I don't believe it one bit.
Okay. All right. Just curious. Well, you know what? Is there an agency like NAS, the National Ag Statistics Service, that puts out all this stuff for WASI? Is there something in the DOD that handles that for missiles? Do we get a monthly missile report on our supply and demand of missiles and all sorts of things like that?
I bet you they do for the enemies.
Do you think the DOD guys count any better than the ag guys?
Maybe they hire the same folks.
Oh, shoot. I hope for our military's sake they don't hire the same folks, because I tell you what, folks at NAS come up with some really weird numbers sometimes. Can you just imagine in the military if the missile counting went the same way as NAS? Like, remember a few years back when the quarterly grain stocks report came out September 30th, so the stocks numbers as of September 1st, and we miraculously found 400 million bushels of corn. Just poof, we found it out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
You got, if NAS guys worked at the DOD counting the missiles and all that stuff, and they lost 300 million one year, and they found 400 million the next year.
Guess what, guys? We got more missiles.
Yeah. It's just fun. It's fun to think about things like that. But in any case, in the expectations for demand, where does Europe come to the table? And Charlie, I'm going to give you a little bit of a heads up here. If you want to know whether or not we are going to be seeing increased action with Europe in terms of demand buying, we need to keep an eye here in our own backyard at the program that comes out of the Great Lakes region. Anything that gets loaded on a boat that wants to come out of the Great Lakes, go up the St. Lawrence Seaway and out. A large part of European commodities action, if they're buying, comes alongside a very healthy Lakers program. The Salties go on out the St. Lawrence Seaway. And I'm hearing through some channels that there might be some expectations arising that there could be some boats wanting to load a little bit later this year. I've got a farmer that I talk with a lot up in Northwest Ohio, the West Unity, Ohio area, that keeps me abreast a lot of times with what's going on with that Laker market there close to Toledo. And he's saying that there's a little bit of chatter about maybe seeing a little bit more Lakes action. And that, to me, if there's more Lakes action, that means we're probably going to be seeing a decent export program to Europe. What will it be? Could it be everything? Could it be beans? Could it be bean meal? Could it be corn and wheat? Yes, it could be everything, but I think the biggest losses with this heat wave that we're hearing about over and over is corn and wheat. So that's where I'm watching. I'm watching to see what my guy up there in Northwest Ohio continues to feed me here through August and September and October, whether we're trying to load any boats up there.
What I was thinking, too, about Europe with all the restrictions on bringing GMOs into the that environment, if are they going to look the other way?
Well, I don't know. A lot of times, look, if you're hungry, yeah, but I also then say, I put it this way, I guarantee you they're not going to be able to get what they want from Brazil. I mean, if they're going to raise the phytosanitary and phytosanitary issues that seem to be used a lot as trade barriers, they're going to be able to get around those easier using a U.S. product than going somewhere else, Brazil or even Russia. So are they going to look the other way? Well, they're going to save face politically, I'm sure, and say, no, absolutely not. But U.S. product is going to get there. If their corn crop is as decimated as what it sounds like the weather has done over there. I mean, in some places, we're talking cutting the yield in half.
Are we talking like 2012 yields, or are we talking...
You're talking 2012 our yields?
2012 our yields, where it was 80 bushel.
It may be close. You know, it's not going to be zeros, but it's going to be whacked pretty hard. If they need commodities, they're gonna get it, whether it fits their bill or not. It just comes down to what kind of story are they going to tell politically to get done what they need to get done. And again, that's Ryan Martin's opinion only. I could be completely wrong, but I'm not.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious how much are they going to stand behind their GMO chatter. I'll call it that.
You know, but that GMO chatter hasn't been nearly as loud in recent years. At least that I've heard. I don't hear them standing up and saying, we don't need anything because of the, you know, GMO. It's just more of they're raising good crops in years past. They haven't really needed much of anything. And that probably changes this year. They're probably going to have to rely on imports here a little bit. So that's what I'm looking at the WASD report. There's going to be, I think, some change in supply. It's probably going to be, boy, I don't know. I wanted to say it's lower. I still think we're looking at a corn crop that probably comes in all said and done in January. The number's probably going to be closer to 179 nationally. But those StoneX numbers are interesting, and it may give this market pause. And the reason why the StoneX numbers are interesting is because they are farmer survey numbers.
Yeah, and that was the interesting part about that whole survey is I learned and looked into it this week was this was StoneX calling people up at Grain Elevators going, hey, what are your farmers saying? What are they saying out there? What are their numbers? And what are they talking about?
Well, and remember, StoneX took over the RJ O'Brien trading stuff. So if you have a trading account, there are a few different places that you can have trading accounts. RJ O'Brien, ADMIS. I still want to rattle off EDF Man, but that doesn't exist anymore. But there, you know, you can get trading brokerage accounts multiple different places. StoneX had that, but now StoneX has expanded so big because all of the RJ O'Brien trading accounts, and there are farmer brokers and farmer IBs all across this country. Allendale is now with StoneX. They were RJ O'Brien. Lots of independents as well. That gave StoneX an even bigger network to call, even outside of elevators, that they could actually have yield surveys. So if you had a trading account that you used to hedge some corn or whatever, that broker could call you and say, hey, Charlie, what do you think? So that goes back to, do we answer NAS correctly on the surveys there? Because according to NAS, you're still growing like 4,000 acres of cotton this year. But you
we'll
know,
just let them think that.
Do you answer your broker, I guess, is the question, with more realistic answers than you answer NAS? And I think the answer is yes.
I would say yes. But however, recently I've been kind of holding back a little bit about what I'm saying out there, what I'm thinking, what our yields are going to be on our farm.
Why?
How much yield we're going to have, and how our soybeans are, how many soybean plants out there are we going to do, and pods and pod counts. And the reason why I do that is just kind of fighting back against the whole AI machine. And
wait. Didn't you just talk two or three episodes ago about how Bex has this new AI tool and it's so fantastic and AI is going to choose your seed? Now, no more than 2-3 weeks later, you're saying, oh, I don't know about this AI crap.
Yep. That is correct. But I'm not willing to go out there and just give away the information anymore. I'm more reluctant to go, it's about this, and undershoot it by quite a bit.
You know, Hogemeyer doesn't use AI in their tools, so maybe if you plant some Hogemeyer seed, that'll keep your data secure.
But AI is a little bit special.
A little bit special.
There's nothing but the best from Bex.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Well, we've gone down a squirrel tangent that we are not going to get out of nicely, so we'll just stop right now.
Oh, boy. Let me get my Bex hat on.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. Look, I can't disagree with you.
You look at, as a farmer, and the more we dive down this whole data trail, maybe we need, as a ag industry, needs to stop and pause a little bit and go, what are we really giving away? When I'm talking to my broker, what information is that broker going to be passing on, or that seed salesman, or
logging this comment here, where's it going?
Right. Whether it's your broker at the local grain elevator, uh-huh, or the guy from Farmers Keepers, or whoever you're doing your sales through. It just makes me put pause in there going like, okay, what are they really after? Who are they really setting up? Because I was thinking about the StoneX survey a little bit, and we're like, you know, I get a check from StoneX through some of these guys. Do I really want to give them that information out? I bet you this is a survey on my yield. Mm-hmm. The sneaky way of getting around NAS. Mm-hmm. And even on the NAS survey, I had one of those phone calls on the wrong day at the wrong time. And that poor guy got an earful. I apologize to whoever it was, but they sure got an earful from me about how they set up the farmers for failure with just publishing all this information, where in all reality, it's out there anyway. But I look at their information, I go, yeah, they're probably right year in, year out, but it'd be nice to see more factual information where they get it from. Satellite imagery, using more of that infrared imagery, figure out what we can do, what we can't do. And I'm surprised that they don't use it more often. And there was a lot of talk this week about going into the WASDE report that, hey, this is the first time they're using satellite imagery. And I'm like, I've been using satellite imagery all along here, Ryan. I've been using it for my scouting. I've been using it for my crop health. I've been figuring out what I have, what I don't have through these imagery. So these folks are just now getting on board. What's wrong with this?
Well, here's what we need to do. I'll solve the problem real easily. We can just turn the entire flock camera network from facing the roads and reading license plate, and we'll just turn them 90 degrees to the left or right and look at cornfields.
I like this thought.
Okay, so
that way they're not reading my license plate as I'm speeding through.
Isn't
town.
This the dumbest thing? That those cameras, how have we gotten to this point where those cameras are now so many places and they are logging so much? I have actually altered the way I drive to certain areas from this farm, because I know there's one on a county road. It is on a county road in the southern part of this county. Why? Why? Why is it here?
Counting tractors.
It's just crazy to think that it's logging my license plate every time I go by that.
Here we go again.
It's back again. Flock cameras have Charlie all choked up. But
it's all the feathers.
If we turn those cameras to the right or left and make them look at corn and see how corn's growing and how pollination happens, I can probably be on board.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So you mentioned Farmers Keeper. You talked about them before you got on here. You got results from your marketing program through them last year. And so without being too nosy, I guess I'll just start asking this way. You happy?
A little bit, and a little bit disappointed.
Okay. kind of refresh us where we're at. Is this kind of a managed bushel program that you give them a certain amount of bushels and they can price however they want?
You give them a certain amount of bushels and they work with it. They pull on marketing moves and pull off marketing moves. And they trade it like I would say the stock market, basically.
Okay, so they're trading bushels on the commodity market, like stocks. And so you said you're, you know, happy and yet also a little disappointed because you're looking at how this program does versus just Charlie Hooyen, grain guy. Did you beat him in anything?
I beat him pretty good in corn.
Okay, so you beat them in corn. How about beans?
Beans, they beat me pretty good.
Okay, they beat you pretty good. What is the major difference between the two? Did you sell an equal percentage of your crop at harvest, or did you end up moving more beans at harvest so that you didn't have as much to play with through the year, or did you move a lot of corn at harvest too?
We moved a lot of beans last year at harvest time, and I was looking at it from the perspective of this upcoming year because it's the bushels that we sold for this upcoming year.
For 2027?
For 2026 to be harvested in 2026.
26, 27. Yes, okay.
26, 27. And they did better than what I did. And I think a lot of that was because I sold a lot early on.
Right.
At that 11, 15 mark, I was seeing that, oh, I can make money at that. At least it's something.
Right.
And I think they were holding off to get a little bit higher price in March and July. That's the only way they get where they were getting with their prices. Yeah. But they sold some, I would imagine, in that early part of the year.
You know, I've never really liked managed bushel programs very much because of what you just kind of beat around the bush at. It's a game. You can get good prices if you play the game right. But at the end of the day, I don't like having my marketing feel like it's a game either. You know, mm-hmm. It's because, again, the biggest thing is, can you be profitable? Can you make some money at a certain strike price? And sometimes the answer is yes. And that makes you not play the game. And so that's, I don't know. I'm not anti-managed bushels. I just.
In my perspective, too, with the corn was, okay, you get up so high, you're going to sell a little bit more. Right. And it managed to get up into that range that I was looking at and going like, yeah, all right, let's sell a little bit more. And then it goes a little bit higher the next couple of days. Well, let's sell a little bit more. And we just kind of played that game until it peaked out. And then as it went down, we sold a little bit more on the way down. And then we just stopped selling after a certain point.
Right. So with this now, with your new, the managed bushels coming in on both corn and beans, where does that put you sold now, percent sold of your crop? And that's part one of the question. And part two is, are you happy with that?
I included that in with my percentages already.
So you haven't changed, you haven't done anything here over
no.
the past couple of weeks?
No.
Okay, and I haven't either. Yeah, I think I said last time we talked about this, my next targets for corn, I'm about 30% sold. I actually walked the cornfield, fairly good chunk of it late last week. It just so happened it was that Friday where it was so flipping humid. I should have picked a different
with
day.
With corn sweat, huh?
No, it was not sweating. It was dew. But I was surprised at two things. First of all, these damn deer have really, I found entire rows for a length of probably 100, 150 feet with the tops of each plant, every single plant missing in that row. Charlie, it looked like I drove a detasseler down through there.
I've seen a couple acres like that.
Well,
in some
if
fields.
You add it up, it is multiple
it's,
acres.
It's significant.
But they just decided to go down. It's like they just went down a row and said, nom, 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 and didn't go to the side. It just was that one. So that one was surprised me, the deer pressure that I've got. And you know what? I'm trying to get a guy on the podcast that makes a product. He's down in the deep south, but he makes a product that if you spray, it's supposed to keep the critters out. It's supposed to keep deer out of your row crops, which is kind of baffling to me, but they swear it works. I want to have him on and talk about that a little bit. But so I noticed that. And the other thing that I noticed is corn loves this weather. It mm-hmm. has just, I mean, I've got some, it's 104-day corn in my field. And that stuff is still 10, 11 foot tall. And I know foliage doesn't always translate into ears, But it's healthy stuff, Charlie. I did not see any significant concerns about tar spot or anything else. It's a healthy crop. I was really taken aback at how good the heart of that field looks.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing overall in our cornfields too. We actually spray fungicide with the Haggy sprayer, so I get to see quite a bit of that
right.
going right through the heart of the field. We saw a significant amount of deer damage done in various areas. I've researched the whole deer spray before, and the guys that I talked to that sell the stuff, they said, you know, one guy says it works great. The other guy says it doesn't work at all. One guy goes out there and sprays it, and 2 hours later, the deer are out there in it. But they consistently had told me that it works until it rains. If you spray it, you go in there, and it rains on it, it's gone. You'll have to reapply it. And it's kind of had in my back of my mind, this is kind of like an insecticide product.
All right.
Where, okay, it's going to work until you get a heavy rainstorm, and then all the insecticide is going to be gone, and you have nothing there. You're going to have to either reapply or just take what you have. So it's really kind of interesting if somebody actually does have a good product out there to repel deer. And then I also wonder how many of these guys hunters are going to get the stuff and spray it around their competitor's deer stand.
Oh, that would be funny. Well, and the other thing that, you know, we did, one of the focal points of early on genetic engineering in corn was the BT stuff. Getting traits in corn that when a rootworm
gets munched, a bite, it doesn't taste good.
It doesn't taste good. And or it kills it. Surely we could come up with something in corn that would make deer take a bite and go, uh-uh. Why haven't we done that?
I have to laugh, though, about the deer damage.
Right.
Because our deer hunters that come in from Detroit, they put up these big, fancy Taj Mahal deer blinds on big towers so they can get all the... And I go out there and I'm looking like, you guys better not miss this year because... All the deer damage is right at the base of your tower, so you better be hitting.
Well, that's
something.
Because they put the salt block out there too, so they can go graze off the corn and then lick the salt and mineral block over.
Oh,
here,
there we go. Yeah, just so we can bait them.
Yeah. So yeah, genetic engineering. Let's genetically engineer some corn that makes deer want to go away.
I like this idea.
So, because honestly, deer damage is a problem everywhere.
You think deer corn sweat would make the deer go away?
Come on, stop it with the corn sweat. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it at all.
Except for Roger. Roger loves it.
And Rob Waybright, he loves it too. I got a call from him today. He wants to see your shirts, by the way.
Oh, he does.
Yes, he wants to see your shirts. So,
well, we'll get our YouTube video up and going.
Well, I thought about turning the camera on this week, but I didn't. So we'll get started with that here in a little bit. Otherwise, Charlie, it's been a slow week. There's not much else out there. I don't know. You got anything else newsworthy, pressing for the week?
Not really.
Yeah. It feels like the summer doldrums. And you know what those mean. Harvest is right around the corner.
That's right. We had our trucks in the shop this week and going through them, and it's amazing about how many of them had holes in the fuel tanks.
In the fuel tanks?
Yes, we found now three trucks, and it's the three trucks that we mainly use have hole in the fuel tanks.
Okay, what's that tell you?
Tells me that I haul a lot during the This road stuff, the road grind on it is really hard on these tanks and stuff, and makes me think that, well, maybe we need to be bringing our trucks in and watching them a little bit closer in the wintertime, even though it's hard to get that power washer out. Maybe we need to be getting this power washer out more often.
Interesting. Interesting. I wonder how many other folks, because I've heard guys say, oh, I don't want to haul in such and such because of the salt. And sometimes I laugh. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, come on, make that truck actually work. But, you know, if... And, you know, you're more so in the throes of some of the Lake Michigan snow events. So there's arguably right. more salt mm-hmm. on the roads where you are, even versus down here. And that's some caustic stuff. It's caustic stuff. And those are stainless steel fuel tanks, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you think anybody is going to be harvesting anything? And by anything, I mean probably beans. Do you think there are any early beans? Anybody going to be cutting anything Labor Day?
I don't think Labor Day, but I will say this. I went and in my irrigation field, went and snuck across the fence line to look at my neighbors, and he has some corn that's dented, starting to dent.
Really? That corn had to have been planted mid-April.
And it was.
Okay.
And you look at it, it's a good ear. It's 14 round, 38 long, and there's a couple of kernels that are starting to dent already.
I don't think that gets hastened along too much, though, by this weather pattern. Warm mm-hmm. and wet does not hasten the dent. So that's okay. Yeah, I think that the only place that we see any kind of bean harvest action remotely close to Labor Day is probably going to be well to the southwest. You get into that area south of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, down in there. From what I've heard, there were enough people that got into the field mid-April on some beans down there that there's going to be something probably cut down that way. And that's going to, you know, the river is going to be crying for beans at some point in there. But here around here, Charlie, it's about as lush and green on corn and beans that I can remember over the past 5, 6, 7 years.
Oh, absolutely.
We're not losing anything anywhere. So I want to remind you that this episode of the podcast brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance, offering up to $3 million of ag infrastructure and real estate financing with an express loan application that can get you approval in 48 hours or less with just taxes and a good, strong cash balance sheet. Mac America Ag Finance, the Northern Indiana office, 574-253-3433. Give them a call. They'll get you set up with that that app and get you on the way for financing for your next round of infrastructure and real estate purchases. We'll see where we go from there. Otherwise, have a great week. Charlie is still over here trying to, are you dead?
I feel like it.
All right. Charlie is still alive for now. We'll try and see if we can get his lungs healed by the next podcast. But thanks for coming over here and hacking your way through a podcast.
Oh, I'm trying. This has been a struggle the whole podcast.
It has. I'm not sure exactly what is. Is it something? You mentioned pollen. This is a pollen-free environment in here in Red Barn Studios. So, but big things coming up. The International Harvester Homecoming was this past weekend. Hopefully being able to talk to some guys on how that went here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to go to Marion University coming up. We've got other things with field days coming. Multiple field days are here. It's August. It's field day time. Check out the ears, check out the pods, check out the hybrids all over the place, and report back to us with what you're finding. And we'll just see how we go on into and through the rest of the month of August. Until then, he's Charlie Hooyan. I'm Ryan Martin. This is the Little Red Barn. From the field to the mine, hey! We bring it every night. And we ain't gonna stop.